Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, here's what you do. Go to antiwar.com/blog. Oh, yeah, I meant... Hi, I'm Scott. Welcome back to the show, guys. Anyway, here's what you do. Go to antiwar.com/blog, and you can see an interview with Jeffrey Sterling. It's not that interesting, really. It's all about his family and much crap I don't care about. But then you can also see this great blog entry by our friend Ray McGovern, from Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, and they're called that because they're all former veteran intelligence professional types. Ray was a CIA analyst for 27 years, and he's been trying to truth you out of war ever since, ever since when. At least this whole century so far. Welcome back to the show, Ray. How are you?
Good, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing good. The article, everybody, is called Punishing Another Whistleblower, and it's about this guy, Jeffrey Sterling, and you know what? He's already convicted, and you're calling him a whistleblower here, and so we can drop the allegedly. You can tell he's lying in the documentary where his eyes get all shifty and go different directions every time he denies doing anything. He should have practiced. But anyway, so yeah, he did heroically reveal some very important truth. Tell us all about it, Ray. What was it?
Well, Scott, it really depends on to whom he gave this information. And the reason he's a whistleblower and not just a leaker is that he went through channels. He went to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and told them about this cockamamie scheme. And said, you know, they're dangerous here. If we're really worried about Iran getting a nuclear weapon, this could help them along. And, of course, he got shut down. So that's the only time we know that he gave information to anybody else outside of CIA. And that, of course, was all authorized. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to go through channels. And if you know that your own inspector general is not going to investigate such abuse, then you're supposed to go to the intelligence committees in Congress, which are called the oversight committees, but what they really are, of course, are the overlook committees, and that's shown in so many instances having to do with, you know, kidnapping, black prisons, torture, you name it. They're the overlook committees. So that's what he did. It is not known that he went to James Risen, who, of course, is the bête noire. I mean, James Risen is enemy number one of CIA and the whole U.S. government. Why? Because he's an incredible reporter, one of the best investigative reporters around, and he has sources that won't quit. His sources for this particular chapter of this particular book, and the chapter, and I advise people to read it, the chapter is Chapter 9, curiously enough, and the book is State of War. Incidentally, in case I don't have a chance to mention it, he's got another book out now, Pay Any Price. Look at Chapter 9 of that. It's incredibly damaging, not only from a risk point of view, risking U.S. interests, but also from the point of view of making the covert operatives in CIA look like a bunch of clowns. That's what they don't really like. That's what Jim Risen has done. And so the way to get at Risen is to go to people like Jeffrey Sterling, who had the intercepted metadata, so to speak, of his telephone conversations, show that he had many telephone calls with James Risen. Now, they have the content of those calls. Did this operation against Iran ever come up in these discussions? No. So it's as though, Scott, you were caught talking to somebody 17 times, and that somebody was interested in doing something illegal. Ipso facto, even though the content of these conversations was held from you, you're guilty. And that's what happened to James, Jeffrey Sterling.
Wait, you're saying you know they have the audio, but they only used the metadata?
they have the audio. We know that because all my NSA friends say that's exactly why they're building these huge football-sized warehouses out in Utah and at NSA. You know how much you can fit on a little thumb drive, right, Scott?
Sure.
Well, the reason they need these incredibly big warehouses is because they have the data. They haven't necessarily looked at the content, I mean.
But you're not saying that you have information that in this specific case, you know that they have the audio of these calls.
I know they had the metadata. It's a very short.
And you're saying they must have had the audio too because they have that capability.
Well, yeah. And they, yeah.
I just want to make that clear that,
No, it's an important point. And you could talk to Bill Binney or Tom Drake and those folks, and they can tell you exactly how it works. But, I've heard from all of them that the content is also stored.
Yeah, Frumkin has this whole new series at The Intercept, too, about how they have what's my dream come true, which is the ability to search audio for text. So, I have all these archives of interviews with Ray McGovern going back a decade where if only we could search audio for text, we could find out, I could have these great quotes, all these things that Ray McGovern told us back a long time ago to prove it or whatever. But they have that. They have the audio and they have the ability to do speech to text in a very effective and efficient and automatic kind of a way here, they're claiming. And so
they do. And this most recent capability just recently came to light. I'm not sure how many years they've been able to search the audio. But what I do know is they had the content of the conversations between those two hijackers in San Diego and that Central in Yemen, the safe house, the telephone switchboard in Yemen, where they were communicating back and forth before 9/11. Now, the President of the United States has gotten up and said publicly, very formally, in defending this blanket surveillance, he said, now, if we only had this blanket surveillance scooping it all up before 9/11, we might have been able to find out the telephone number of those people in San Diego. Well, hello, Mr. President. Do you know about caller ID? We knew those numbers. Then the president said, we might have been able to find out about that one conversation between San Diego and Yemen. Mr. President, the head of the National Counterterrorism Center said there were six such calls. Well, yeah, but if we had the Mr. President, we had the metadata and we had the content. So what I'm saying here is that the president is either woefully misinformed, underinformed, or, ill-informed, or he's lying through his teeth. We had the number in San Diego, we had the content, and there were six calls, not just one. So this is very delicate sort of stuff. What they had on Jeffrey Sterling was a whole bunch of calls between James Risen and Jeffrey Sterling.
And they had an alibi for that too, right? That, yeah, I was talking with Risen, but it was about something entirely different.
That's right. And you could be sure that if they could fish out of those conversations, the content of those conversations, any indication at all that they discussed this operation, this cockamamie operation, that the operatives in the covert action section of the CIA had mounted, you could be sure that they would have been able to give the prosecution and the judge more than just circumstantial evidence. How it went down, and I was there at the trial, they recruited a jury, all white, defense-friendly folks from Northern Virginia, right? Alexandria is where the courthouse is. And they sold them a bill of goods with the help of the case officers from CIA. And not only did the case officers, work their wiles on the prosecutor, but also on the judge. And so even though the evidence, as the judge admitted just Monday, was very circumstantial, she very defensively said, that's all right, you can convict somebody on circumstantial evidence. It's been done before. It's copacetic legally. She didn't say copacetic. Yeah. It is legal, So
from all the coverage, it was clear that they did not have him beyond a reasonable doubt. It was just Do you believe us? Come on. Let us have a conviction. And so they got one. Hang on one second. We'll be right back, everybody, with more Ray McGovern right after this.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. I'm on the line with Ray McGovern. He writes at consortiumnews.com and also has his own website at raymcgovern.com. And you can watch, you know, when he does video interviews or any of these kinds of things, like Press TV. He's got a brand new one here. And all of his articles for consortiumnews.com, they all run here as well at raymcgovern.com. And now, so we're talking about Jeffrey Sterling, who's been convicted and sentenced to 3.5 years in prison for leaking the Merlin story to James Risen. And so now, refresh our memory, if you would, please, Ray, about what was Operation Merlin?
Well, the way it was explained by the CIA was a very clever operation where they would do blueprints of the firing device for nuclear weapons. They would get them all checked out with the national laboratories of the Department of Energy, get them approved, and then put a flaw in those plans and plant them with the Iranians. They would give them to the Iranians, and the cover story, as I've come to believe it is, was that they intended to have the Iranians deceived by this, not notice the flaw. See, these Iranians, they're not like us. They're not smart or anything, even though they're nuclear engineers, and they're going to find the flaw. And then all of a sudden, all the centrifuges are going to blow up or something like that, okay? Now, that didn't pass the smell test for me. Do we have a couple minutes left, Scott? About how many minutes do we have?
Oh, we got six and a half, seven minutes.
Okay, good.
Actually, well, you know what? I can keep you another segment if you want, no problem, so.
Well, that would be good because, you know, I'm an old inveterate intelligence analyst, and I like to see other people catching on to the game. And one of those people is David Swanson, who is an incredibly bright truth seeker and who came and sat with us at the trial of Jeffrey Sterling in January. Now, I have never in my life, Scott, seen the CIA divulge so many operational cables to prove their case that Jeffrey Sterling did this dastardly deed. Now, Swanson, to his credit, looked really closely at these cables and found out one that sort of betrays what I think this was all about. It was not so much about giving Iran plans that would blow up their centrifuges when they got well into following the blueprints.
Well, it was just a fire set. It wasn't a... I don't know if it had centrifuges in it, right? It was the fire set that could be used for different things besides nukes anyway, but it's far from even a complete nuclear blueprint.
Right, but the blueprint was what they were seen to have lacked. In any case, however it was supposed to go down ostensibly, the real reason was to get these blueprints into the hands of the Iranian officials and then catch them with them. And show, well, see, the Iranians are much farther along in getting a nuclear weapon than we thought. Right. Look, here are the blueprints. Now,
that was what Gordon Prather used to say back 10 years ago and said that, yeah, but the Iranians, of course, looked right at it, knew how bogus it was, and obviously just threw it right in the trash, probably burned it on site if they ever even, you know, whenever they put their hands on it, got rid of it. They weren't going to get entrapped that easy.
Yeah, not only the Iranians, but the Iraqis. Now, bear in mind, we're talking 2000, right? The year 2000, 2001, when people like Jeb Bush and the other neocons were trying to incite an attack on Iraq, okay? Now, what was the big issue? Obviously, that Iraq was working on a nuclear weapon. Dick Cheney told us so, so it must be true. they already had a nuclear weapon, says Dick Cheney. So there was no proof because there weren't any nuclear weapons. Matter of fact, we learned out later that they had stopped working on a nuclear weapon in 2003. In any case, if you could get blueprints of this kind to the Iraqis and then mount a very clever, very courageous clandestine operation to seize them and get them back, whoa, you would have the equivalent of the yellow cake materials, which was supposed to have proven that Iraq had sought yellow cake, which is slightly more enriched uranium, from the deepest, darkest part of Africa, Niger, and was somehow getting that up into Baghdad to refine it and to make it into nuclear material. So what we have here, I think, is circumstantial evidence far better than what Jeffrey Sterling was convicted on. And here it is. Those of you who have gotten in the interim the State of War, look on page 207, because Risen dropped a hint. He said this operation, which was called Merlin, some officials have suggested that it would be repeated against other countries. Well, let's get back to the cable that David Swanson looked at very carefully. Here it is. It's an operations cable from the CIA, and it talks about consulting the case officers who were working with the labs to get the blueprints together. And they were asked, would you have any objection to a rather more adventurous current operation? We want to see how this plays out before now. If you know how cables are constructed, there are discrete grids, okay, across and up and down. The article here is an. So the next word, which stands for country, has to begin with a what? With a vowel, right? The only country that fits in there too, actually, Iraqi and Omani. Now, I don't think anybody thinks that the Omanis are working on nuclear weapon. So here it is. Because of the very imperfect redaction here, where they left the an rather than an a or rather than no article, here's a sentence. We want to see how this thing with Iran plays out before making an Iraqi approach. Later in that same paragraph, Iraq fits in where the country is mentioned. So what are we talking about here? We're talking about getting the goods, so to speak, in quotes, getting the goods on Iran and Iraq by fabricating these carefully constructed blueprints and stealing them back, giving them to Dick Cheney and saying, aren't we good guys? Aren't we smart? Look, we can make believe that we stole these from the Iranians and the Iraqis. There's a casus belli there. Now we know how far along Iraq is in developing the firing device for our nuclear weapon, which is which is very important. Mm-hmm. So I think that was the reason behind all this, and that's precisely why James Risen here is really enemy number one here in Washington. And the general objective of this whole thing, Scott, is to make sure that no one talks to any press people about any things like this, and to make sure that nobody ever talks to James Risen again. It's not working. James still has his sources, and he's continuing to publish to this day.
Right. Well, and he's, as he said too, they just made him mad now. So if he was doing journalism before, look out, kind of thing. So.
Yeah, he had many sources for this story, and when in court, the CIA guys were asked, well, how many people knew about all this? And I think they said about 60.
All right. I'm sorry. Hold it right there. We can do one more segment here. It's Ray McGovern, everybody. We'll be right back.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. Just remember there was a thing by Jeffrey Kay I was supposed to read that I forgot about. I'm glad I remember that. Okay, hey, I still got Ray on the line here. And we're talking about Jeffrey Sterling and the Merlin program and David Swanson, the author of War is a Lie. And I guess that's his website, too. You're saying he figured out, and you agree with him, that behind that redaction, it must be Iraq, and that the CIA, in trying to nail Sterling, released so many documents in his trial that they accidentally implicated themselves in a plot to not just frame Iran under Operation Merlin for holding some partial nuclear blueprints, but they were trying, or they were at least planning on framing the Iraqis in the exact same way.
That's exactly right. And of course, the yellow cake uranium caper was exactly the same kind of thing. Fabricated document that was revealed before the war, mind you. A month before the war, the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, examined those forgeries and pronounced them forgeries before the UN Security Council, and Colin Powell said, well, okay, if they're forgeries, they're forgeries. 1 month later, shock and awe. The thing that I didn't know until I prepared for this little conversation, Scott, was that Risen had that too. He's incredible. He hinted that, well, he didn't hint. He said some officials told him that this was really going to be applied to other countries. And now we have that cable, which I don't know what happened to the guy who was supposed to redact it, but it doesn't take, you know, doesn't take a lot of knowledge just to go down the grid there and see that the countries that were redacted fit very nicely as Iraqi and Iran. So that was the name of the game. But let me say something about the sentence. The sentence that Sterling got was 42 months in prison, so 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. The government was pushing for 10 times that, okay? Right. And, of course, you know, Chelsea Manning is there for 35 years in the brig in Leavenworth. So what happened? Well, you know, it's probably the only good thing that General Petraeus has done in his recent life, but it was because of his wrist slap for divulging far more dangerous information than Jeffrey Sterling ever had access to his mistress, to build up his reputation for the biography that she was making of for him. He gave her 8 notebooks full of the highest secrets. And we have FBI taps on their telephones. And they say, Petraeus says, I can't give you that, Paula. Those have code word. They're the highest. Those have conversations of me and the president. And so he delivers them, hand delivers them to her place in Georgetown. And then he realizes, oh, wait a second. I'm going to be head of the CIA right after Labor Day. I better get those books back because I'm going to be surrounded by CIA security types. I don't want. So he said, Paula, may I please have those notebooks back? And she said, oh, sure, sure. So he goes by himself, picks up the notebooks, puts them in a secret place in his house, and breathes a sigh of relief that the CIA security types who are coming to protect him wouldn't learn about it. So what happens is, he's quizzed by the FBI. The FBI records and the court documents indicated that they identified themselves as pursuing a criminal investigation, and he lied twice, knowingly, knowing that he had done what he denied doing. So how does this all play out? Well, guess what? In January, when the trial ended and he was convicted, that is Sterling, The sentencing date was set for the 24th of April, okay? So we're all set, you know, those of us who sat through the trial, go to the sentencing, and all of a sudden the judge says 2 weeks before, no, we're gonna put that off until 11 May. Now, why was that? You know why it was that? Because Petraeus, guilty of these heinous crimes, including lying to the FBI, he was going to be sentenced on the 23rd of April. Okay. Oh, gosh. And what did he get? Well, he got sort of a little probation. They didn't even mention the lying to the FBI. And then he got docked $100,000. Now, Scott, that's a lot of money for you and me, right? But Petraeus makes $130,000 for each hour that he speaks before these well-heeled folks. Okay. So that's what he got.
Now, How to Lose Two Wars by David Petraeus.
So
man,
here's
a really premium fee for that one.
Oh, God, she says, Petraeus is going to get a wrist slap on the 23rd of April. I can't go ahead and sentence Jeffrey Sterling to prison on the 24th. So we'll put it off for what we call in Washington a decent interval, right? And so on Monday, she sentenced him to 3.5 years. Now, why was that relatively mild? Well, she all but said that justice is not very equal, that the government sentencing guidelines are way, way out of scope here. And indeed, I think she had some pangs of conscience at having let this charade take place in her courtroom. There was one other, it would be amusing if it weren't so serious, but the prosecutor, after he gave his closing statement at the end, he said, I have to tell you, this was really arduous. This was really hard work, but there were pleasures. When one of the main pleasures was getting to know the CIA case officers. What a wonderful bunch. They were so cooperative.
They're all out bowling together.
You know what I'm saying is, whoa, these guys, they're stock in trade. It's a bull, throwing a bull, snow jobs. And they worked their wiles on the prosecutor, and they worked their wiles on the judge. It was just so embarrassing. I want to shout out, hey, don't you know what these guys are paid for? Looks like they did a pretty good job on you, too, which is exactly how it worked out. Of course, the CIA wanted just as much as the Department of Justice to hang somebody for talking to James Risen, even though they couldn't prove it. And that's the lesson here. You know, these Department of Justice lawyers, I'm thinking of the ones that tried Tom Drake or pursued him for 4 years, And at the end, he had a public defender because he ran out of money. And at the end, the judge in the Maryland federal court said, you Justice Department lawyers, don't you ever bring a case like this into my court again based on such fragile, such elusive, such forged information, all felony charges dismissed.
Sure. Well, it's all just lawless persecution, trying to make an example out of these people to the other bureaucrats, of which there are millions, that they better not leak, because there's no other way to control them other than to just try to make them afraid.
Yeah, one interesting aspect of this is that people, the foot soldiers in the Department of Justice and the FBI saw that Petraeus had played fast and loose with the most sensitive kind of information, his conversations with the President of the United States, code word material. And so they wanted to go after him. And that's why he was tried. But in the end, his superiors all said, well, he's such a distinguished guy. Dianne Feinstein, the senator, the Intelligence Committee says, oh, he's suffered enough. Well, what about Jeffrey Sterling?
I want to, if it's possible here, and I'm going to end up keeping into this break a little bit, but it's all right for the archive anyway. I want to ask you about, to talk to the people a little bit about the neocon obsession with Iran that's revealed in this story, too. And for that matter, the CIA obsession. But it's a pretty big deal to try to frame up Iran with a nuclear weapons program when supposedly that's a casus belli around here. I wonder if you can explain what you think was really behind this, Merlin, as far as, were they really trying to start a war back then?
I guess I would have to answer that with utmost candor, and that is that the neocons who came back under George W. Bush, the Wolfowitzes and the Pearls, and all those folks that his father, George H.W. Bush, kept at arm's length, okay, because he knew... We refer to them as the crazies, okay? Quote, the crazies, end quote. They were back. They were running the policy. Now, they are neocons, and the way I define that term is people who have great difficulty distinguishing between what they perceive to be the strategic needs of Israel on the one hand and the strategic needs of the United States on the other. Do I criticize that? Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. I just don't think they should be running American foreign policy, and they were during the early years of the Bush regime. And that's your answer. The Israelis were after Iran. They wanted to blacken them. Even when it was proven by the intelligence community in an honest assessment, and it gave me courage or gave me hope that this could be reversed, an honest assessment in November 2007, which concluded unanimously all 16 U.S. intelligence agencies, as they put it, with high confidence, quote unquote, Iran stopped working on a nuclear weapon at the end of 2003, at the end of 2003, and has not resumed work on that weapon. Now, that has been revalidated and reaffirmed every year since by the Director of National Intelligence. Now, he doesn't always tell the truth, but in this case, the analysts were holding his feet to the fire and said, nothing has changed since in 2007. We have no evidence that Iran is working on a nuclear weapon. So what's this big charade going on in Geneva and Vienna? And well, that's to satisfy the neocons, to show that, even though the intelligence community says they're not working on a nuclear weapon, well, they could in the future, and also, so we'll put these big restrictions on them and require them to lift the sanctions. So, to his credit, Obama is faced into a lot of flack and a lot of fire for doing this. I hope that he persists. I wish I could put money on the fact that he'll persist. But if there's an agreement with Iran, then we will see that Netanyahu and those people that elected him have overplayed their hand. For once, the U.S. has said, no, Israel's interests here in making Iran the bête noire on the flimsy evidence they have, that they're after nuclear weapons when Israel has 200 of same. That's not going to work this time. We're going to do this. And this is going to change things in the Middle East.
Yeah, I like the way you put that. I'm the only other person I've heard put it that way when I was interviewed by Tom the other day. And I guess it's the first time I really had the opportunity to construct it that way, to think about it that way. But that really all that's happening with the nuclear deal is that the Americans are finally admitting the truth and lifting the sanctions and ending the Cold War that's been waged under the excuse of the nuclear program. And the Iranians are letting them save face by going ahead and scaling back a bit and expanding inspections a bit for the Americans to come back around to the reality. That's what's really happening here, finally.
Yeah, and Scott, the supreme irony here is that we could have had even a better deal back in 2009, 2010. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's when Obama came in. He pledged
that matter in 2003.
Well, then too, yeah, but that's right. Yeah, when the Iranians gave a blanket overture to us. But what I'm thinking is that when Obama came in, he said he would talk directly to Iran. He sent Bill Burns to Geneva to talk to them, and they laid out the kind of sweeping plan to restrict their nuclear weapons development that they knew Iran would turn down. And guess what? Iran said, sounds good to us. In principle, let me go back, sell this to our leadership, and we'll meet in Vienna in a month. Well, long story short, that was sabotaged by a terrorist attack in Iran that killed five, count them, five Revolutionary Guards generals, okay? And then later, when the Brazilians and the Turks worked out a similar arrangement, that was sabotaged by Hillary Clinton. So 2009, 2010, we could have had an even better deal, which would have provided for low-enriched uranium from Iran going abroad to be refined, rather than being refined into higher degree uranium in Iran itself. So there are many ironies here. Ende gut, alles gut, as the Germans say. If this ends well, all will be well in terms of progress in relations between the U.S. and Iran, which is a really important thing. And Israel's nose will be out of joint. But we'll still give them $3 billion a year to build those settlements in the occupied territories until they overstep again. And I hope that will stop before Obama leaves.
All right. Thanks very much for coming back on the show, Ray. It's always great to talk to you.
Good to be with you, Scott. Take care now.
All right, y'all. That's the great Ray McGovern, veteran intelligence professional sanity. Find him at raymcgovern.com and at consortiumnews.com, and for that matter at antiwar.com, where we run virtually everything he writes, including his most recent piece on Sterling, is on the blog there at antiwar.com/blog. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.